Hello, Carroll County. This is Commissioner Tom Gordon of District 3, and this week I have the podcast. Fortunate this week to have Stephanie Powers, who is the Executive Director of CARE Healing Center, with me today. So thank you for being here.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So just to start off, could you tell us a little bit more about CARE Healing Center and when was it founded and a little more background information?
Sure. So I think most people in the county would know the CARE Healing Center by our former name, which was the Rape Crisis Intervention Service of Carroll County. We were founded in 1978 and have been serving all survivors of any form of sexual violence in the county since then.
That's quite some time to be involved with Carroll County, and it's great to have you all in the community. What was the reasoning or purpose behind the organization rebranding?
So in the summer of 2023, we went from Rape Crisis or RCIS to the CARE Healing Center. CARE stands for our four pillars of service: counseling, advocacy, resources, and education. And we really wanted to encompass all of the services that our agency offers and really highlight that we're not just serving survivors of rape, it's survivors of any form of sexual violence, including the human trafficking work that the agency now does. I would say probably our most common helpline call are people calling saying, well, I wasn't raped. Would you still be able to offer me services? Or we get a lot of parents who call who are interested in services because their child was sexually assaulted.
Now, you mentioned human trafficking, and I know that's something that's, I think, become more noticeable and aware as the community kind of looks deeper into that. How prevalent is that in Carroll County?
So I think when we first started doing this work, no one really had a good idea of what human trafficking actually looked like. And I've been doing this work for the last 19 years, and I can look back at my early career now and say, oh, well, that case actually was human trafficking, because it's any instance in which there is an exchange of goods for a sexual act, and also when there's any force, fraud, or coercion. So a lot of what we're seeing in Carroll County are a lot of teenagers. I would say it's most prevalent in 13 to 17-year-olds who are engaging in sexual acts for basic survival skills. So it's a lot of trading sex to meet their basic needs, to be able to get school supplies, to be able to have a meal because their basic needs aren't being met.
So typically when somebody mentions human trafficking, we're thinking of things you would typically see in movies and so forth. I mean, on that level, how prevalent is that in not just, say, our community, but just the region as a whole?
Absolutely. So I think a lot of times people confuse human trafficking for what we consider human smuggling. And that is where you think of like the tractor trailer, semi-truck, moving people across borders. And Carroll County, we're uniquely situated along I-70, so we do see a lot of people who are being trafficked across county borders and things along those lines. We do work with our sister agency, Hartley House, which is in Frederick County, quite frequently, especially along that Mount Airy corridor, to be able to provide survivors with services. A lot of human trafficking does happen along truck stops, so again, servicing those survivors. Human trafficking is super prevalent in vulnerable communities. So we know often children who run away from homes. It's a crazy statistic, like within 48 hours, a kid that runs away from home is immediately approached by a trafficker, because it's this idea of, oh, we'll provide you support, we'll be able to help you with your basic needs. And in October of last year, the services we provide expanded from sex trafficking to also labor trafficking. So in being in a rural county, we're also helping now with kind of like the migrant workers that we're seeing. Even, I think how often you have kids come to your door selling magazines or cleaning supplies. If you look, those are the kind of kids where they knock on your door, they're trying to sell a product. And if you look, it's usually they're in a white van out in a court. And those are the kids who are basically being told, okay, in order to get a meal or to get your stipend for this week, you have to make X amount of sales. That all falls under the umbrella of labor trafficking. So again, if you see something, say something. You can call our agency, let us know what you're seeing. Let the kids know that there is an agency in the county that will gladly help them. Because not only do we offer like counseling services and our 24-hour helpline, we do have the ability to provide them with their basic needs. So if they need a gift card to be able to get a meal, like that's something that we would gladly assist with.
Now, I would assume based off of some of these being, I guess, newer reported, I would assume the numbers on some of this is quite significant.
Oh, absolutely. And again, it's hard because sexual violence in general is the least reported crime. So it's hard to get a standard statistic, especially for trafficking, because like I said, I've been doing this for a really long time, and it's hard to look at something and realize that that's exactly what it is. We're seeing a lot with the teenagers now with what we would consider sextortion. So they're being asked to provide, like, send me a nude. And then once they send a nude picture, it's like, okay, I'm going to send this to everyone you know if you don't give me money. And especially, you know, technology changes. And by the time we actually find out about an app or something like that, the kids are smarter than we are and they've moved on to something else. And with AI now, it's not even actual images. They're able to create images or put people's faces on images. I mean, even, you know, politicians, like there's legislation that's going through now about deep fakes. So again, everything's constantly changing in this field. So it's staying up to date on those kind of things.
That's a tremendous amount of material to stay up on and obviously looking out for everybody in the community. As the executive director, what are your roles and responsibilities at CARE Healing Center?
Oh, I wear a lot of hats. We're a very small agency. We do a lot of work. So I started at the agency in 2018 as a volunteer, and it was because my family moved to the community and I had previously worked treating survivors of sexual assault and domestic violence in Harford County. I'm a therapist by trade, and when my family moved here, I missed doing the work, so I decided that I was going to volunteer. And after I was volunteering for a short amount of time, the agency got a grant for 5 more hours of therapy a week, and so they offered me that position. And then after doing 5 hours of therapy, I started doing 16 hours, and then I became the agency's clinical director. And then last year, I took on the role of executive director. So with that, I oversee just general agency operations. I still take on overnight shifts on the helpline because, again, being a 24-hour operation, we always have to kind of be all hands on deck. I work with all of our staff. There's not a job that's too big or too small. So again, like a little bit of everything.
Absolutely. So obviously we're talking about some of the various concerns. Are there any other like significant concerns that the community should be aware of at this point that's going on that maybe, you know, isn't something they're going to see on the news typically or anything in that fashion?
I mean, I think right now I was looking at our stats because right now is grant season. So we're getting ready to apply for all of our state and federal funding. And 13 to 17 seems to be our largest population. It used to be that the 18 to 24-year-old population, college age, was the highest rates for sexual assault. It's getting younger and younger. We also see children starting at age 5 for therapy at our agency. So any child that has been sexually assaulted, we will see. And I think it's this idea that people don't realize how prevalent sexual violence is. And I think right now, people are talking about it more and people are seeking out services more. So we will have people who were sexually abused 50 years ago call us and say, hey, you know, I never called the police or I never told anyone about this. Am I still eligible for services? And absolutely. We always say it doesn't matter if it happened 5 days ago or 50 years ago, you are still eligible for services at our agency. I think letting people know that if the national statistic is 1 in 4 women and 1 in 6 men will experience an act of sexual violence in their lifetime, that if it's not you, it's somebody that you know. And having our name on the tip of your tongue, being able to refer people to our agency is so important because nobody ever thinks that they're going to need us, but to know that we're here and that we're going to help any way that we can is so important.
In reference to that, so how could members of the community be better advocates, not only say for themselves, but their neighbors and other people in general?
I'm a firm believer of see something, say something, and to trust your gut. If you're working with somebody and they kind of give you an ick feeling, trust that, kind of keep eyes on something. Right now, we're getting ready on May 28th. We're doing a college readiness program, not to say that the responsibility is on someone not to get sexually assaulted, because the number one cause of sexual assault is perpetrators. But with students getting ready to go to senior week or off to college, we're doing what we're calling as the Red Zone Readiness Program. We're doing it at Exploration Commons on May 28th in the evening. And it's really to prepare students for like, okay, the first 2 weeks that somebody goes to a college campus every year is when they are most likely to be sexually assaulted. So it's that idea of just having some awareness, learning about how common it is to have your drink spiked, learning about general self-defense techniques. It used to always be, oh, carry your keys between your fingers. Well, nobody carries keys anymore. So, like, what else do we do now? So we will have demonstrations on general safety, you know, buddy systems, letting your friends know what your intentions are. So just kind of having more awareness, letting people know what to look for. I think parents are doing a really good job of talking to children about consent and bodily autonomy and bodily safety at a younger age. We always welcome parents to call our agency, and we have coloring books and resources and can really help parents to talk, to have these conversations, to teach children about how to know about what is good touch, bad touch. I always say, growing up in the 80s, it was always stranger danger. You know, avoid the man in the white van who's Absolutely. Giving out candy and puppies. But that is not what we see anymore. Most people who are sexually abused are abused by someone that they know. So really helping parents to learn to trust your child. Kids don't make up that they were sexually abused. That is not common. So if your child tells you that someone is hurting them, whether it's physically or sexually, teaching them to believe their child and teaching them to advocate for their kid and learning the resources in the community of who they can call and how they can get their child help. We know that the best predictor for a positive outcome after a child has been sexually assaulted is caretaker response. So if your caretaker says, I believe you, I'm going to change it, and I'm going to protect you, then that kid is going to be way more successful in getting through that trauma. And then we won't see it later down the line. You know, kids who experience trauma at a young age and don't get the help they need, we see them dropping out of school. We see them turning to substance abuse problems, higher suicide rates. So if we can help people sooner, then they're going to have a much better chance of getting through that in the long run.
So you've mentioned, you know, obviously you have the event coming up, but do you have any other events or opportunities for people, if it would be fundraisers or events so they could get involved to support your mission?
Well, we're always looking for volunteers, whether it is a helpline volunteer or a hospital accompaniment volunteer. So like I said, we run a 24-hour helpline. So we're always looking for people who are willing to man the helpline. We also do hospital accompaniments for forensic exams. So when someone is sexually assaulted, if they choose to go to the hospital to collect forensic evidence, if somebody goes to the hospital, it doesn't mean that they have to call the police or have to report it. It just means that evidence can be collected and it will be stored. We're always looking for people to go to sit with that survivor and to say, you know, this shouldn't happen to you, to walk them through what the process is going to look like, and to be that warm and fuzzy person, because the wonderful forensic nurses that we work with, they have to be very procedural and have to follow the protocols in order to collect the evidence. So we get to be there and be the emotional support and help them with grounding techniques and talk to their support systems if they're not ready to. So we're always looking for volunteers that way. If people would like to help out the agency, but they don't really want to do any direct client services, we're always looking for volunteers in the office or to help out with events. And then as far as just any monetary donations, you know, right now we're living in kind of uncertain times when it comes to funding. And all of our services are 100% free of charge. We will never charge anyone for any therapy services or anything along those lines. So in order to keep our programs funded, we're always willing to take any monetary donations. We also take clothing donations for our court closet for our clients who are going for protective orders or court accompaniments. We also collect hygiene products because our clients who are going to the hospital, once the evidence has been collected, if they want to take a shower, we'll always bring a change of clothes because their clothes most of the time are collected for evidence. And then a toiletry bag so that way they have the opportunity to shower to be able to, you know, clean themselves off and feel like a person again. And we always take self-care items because after a sexual assault, so many people lose their sense of self-worth. And we always want people to feel like, you know, you are deserving of this because this never should have happened to you in the first place.
What's the best way for somebody to reach out if they want to get involved, whether it's volunteering or, you know, donating or anything in that fashion? What's the best way?
So you can always find us at our website, which is www.carehealingcenter.org, or you can call our office at 410-857-0900. Again, social media, stop by the office. We're located right in Westminster. There's always somebody around to talk to us. All the events in the community, we tend to be at most of the resource fairs. call us, stop in. We're always going to be a friendly face to chat.
Well, I truly appreciate you coming in today and taking the time.
Anytime.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks.